Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Don't hate the player. Hate the game.
The chosen one.
He's simply ravishing.
So high five.
What time is it?
You're listening to Music of the Mat on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
Hello, and welcome to Music of the Mat, the podcast devoted exclusively to the music of pro wrestling. It's all part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. I'm your host, Andrew Rich. This is episode 169. Nice. And it's the 2023 Halloween Spooktacular. And today I'm joined by a first-time guest here on the show. He is one of the hosts of the Days of Thunder podcast, also on the VOW network. It's Dave Ryan. Hello, Dave.
Hi, Andrew. Thank you so much for having me on the show. As one half of the Statler and Waldorf of World Championship Wrestling, I am very happy to be called upon for such a seasonal special.
Yes, we'll get to that. Don't you worry. But I'm glad you're here. Definitely. It's funny. I had actually asked your podcast partner, Lee Malone, to come on for this. But he told me that if he did any more podcasts this week, his wife would kill him. So, you know, in the interest of Lee's health and his marriage, I have brought on the other Days of Thunder host instead. So welcome, Dave.
That Lee Malone is like a candle in the wind. Unreliable.
Yes. Well, since it's your first time on the show here, Dave, I'll ask you this. How did you become a wrestling fan? How'd you get into it?
Oh, so I've kind of gotten into the story a little bit sometimes on Days of Thunder, where I think like a lot of people who grew up in the 90s, it's hard to pinpoint an exact time when. I know talking to relatives of mine who were super into wrestling, I as a toddler, bore witness to Macho Man Randy Savage's wedding at SummerSlam. But I have no memory of this. My first solid memory of wrestling is Shawn coming down from the ceiling at WrestleMania 12. And somehow after that match, I stuck around to be a fan for many years. I was definitely like solidly into it as part of my like weekly routine within a year or so after that, even if I can't pinpoint the time exactly. But it's just always been with me as long as I can remember, because WrestleMania 12, I would have been about 6 years old, 7 years old. So it's never left me since then. And, you know, it's kind of ebbed and flowed over the years. Like I was just watching WWF for the first couple of years. Then I got wind that this other company, WCW, were on after the Cartoon Network ended over here. So I was watching Nitro and Thunder then until I think about maybe the end of 2000, it went off those channels over here. And then I kind of would have picked up some TNA over the 2000s. And, you know, it's been kind of up and down based on my access to it over the years. But I, you know, it's been nearly 30 years now of watching wrestling to some extent.
And has music played a big part in your fandom over the years as well?
Yeah, I think like when I evaluate wrestling as an experience, I try to look at it as, you know, the whole picture. That there are times where I've, in my personal tastes, favored kind of, you know, work rate or, you know, guys who can talk and things like that. But I've always considered, as part of the whole experience, music to be a really integral factor for me. There are definite key moments in my fandom that I can tie wrestling music to. I told a story once, I can't remember if it was on air or not, about my 13th birthday. And I remember it was my 12th birthday. I remember it distinctly because just before we left, we were watching the edition of WWF Livewire where the stalker was revealed to be Diamond Dallas Page. And when we went to do laser tag for my birthday that day, the person running the laser tag put on WWF The Music Volume 5 to soundtrack our experience, which was just a phenomenal time. I have great memories of taking road trips down to family over one particular summer down in Cork, at the south of Ireland, listening to Forcible Entry, that album, that incredibly named album, over and over and over again. So it's always been part and parcel, especially then when I kind of got older and was going to shows more regularly. I think particularly the live experience is enhanced by great music. Just this past summer, going to All in Wembley and hearing Seek and Destroy being played for Sting and Derby's entrance might have been my personal highlight of the whole experience, to be honest.
I'm just picturing a young Dave at laser tag while, you know, Get Rowdy is playing, or Pie, yeah, or one of those songs, you know. So
the two particular moments of weirdness were Kurt Angle's theme, Metal, and Pie. It was the rhythm of the laser tag changed somewhat during those.
I can imagine. Yeah. Well, today, Dave, we are doing our annual Halloween Spooktacular episode of the show. We do it every year, and whenever I do it, I like to ask the guest, you know, when you were a kid watching wrestling, were there ever any wrestlers or moments that scared you? Not like a botch or a scary injury, but like a creepy angle or some such?
I've always been somebody that kind of, I love horror and spooky things, whereas it very rarely actually would scare me. And the era I kind of grew up watching, so you're talking Attitude Era, you know, end of New Generation into the Attitude Era, like the spooky gimmick that obviously comes to mind is Undertaker, especially during kind of Ministry of Darkness era Undertaker. And like, I don't think any of that stuff, whether he was sacrificing humans on Raw or getting involved in, you know, trying to marry Stephanie or anything like that.
Crucifying Austin, the whole kid in the noodle there, yeah.
I don't think any of that came off particularly scary to me. Like, not necessarily hokey either at that age, but just kind of like camp in a very wonderful way. So I can't. And then, like, after that, kind of, you know, as an adolescent, you're talking some of the kind of most cringy, scary gimmicks. You're talking Boogeyman, you're talking the zombie, things like that. So much as, like, I have the twin loves of wrestling and horror, I don't think I came up in a particularly great time for it being effectively scary.
Well, since you host a WCW Thunder podcast, I can imagine just the terrifying sights that you have witnessed over the years. I mean, there have been many times where I see you or Lee posting in Slack or Discord where you're like, you know, oh my God, this is awful. I can't take it anymore. Please make it stop. Oh God, no. I mean, the sheer dread in your words and having to watch, you know, a Vincent match or whatever, it's quite apparent, Dave.
Yeah, that's like, at the end of the day, you can do all the scary gimmicks you want, but I have seen true horror in my day, and we've still got the worst of it ahead of us. We're in that kind of summer before Russo arrives, so we're kind of like at the tail end of the Nash booking era, where like things are really bad, but they're about to be kind of turbocharged by the arrival of Russo within a couple of months. And we're going to have some of the great, terrible, spooky angles of all time. We're going to have Dale Torborg lost in a graveyard in a year or so. So I'm looking forward to all that.
Yes, the Lovecraftian horrors that await you in 2000 WCW. I mean, oh boy. Strap in. Just strap in, my friend. But anyway, for this year's Halloween Spooktacular, Dave, we have you on for a very good reason. That's because we're doing a special version of it. We're still just doing five songs like normal, but we're going to talk about songs from one promotion only, and that promotion is, of course, WCW. Now, we've played a bunch of Halloween-centric WCW themes on the show before. Mortis, Glacier, The Kiss Demon, Seven. But this episode, we are devoting the entire thing to WCW. And these themes may not necessarily be, you know, spooky per se, but the gimmicks themselves are quite wacky and colorful and befitting the very over-the-top nature of the Halloween season. And as we all know, Dave, WCW had more than its fair share of wacky, over-the-top characters, that's for sure.
For sure. There is maybe no better company to find a marriage of absolutely insane gimmicks and music that could potentially be the subject of lawsuits or just interesting music in one way or another. It's one of the things that makes me so sad. It's something that Lee often harps on the show, is like what Peacock and the WWE Network have done to all that legacy WCW music. That we kind of tried to talk about what the original song sounded like when the opportunity presents themselves. Like Goldberg has just started coming out to Megadeth now in where we are in our timeline, and WWE have done a fairly patchy job of scrubbing that out. Sometimes it's left in their whole cloth, sometimes it's edited over with the WWE version of Goldberg's music, and it's that is maybe truly the scariest thing of all. but it's a company that was really, again, like I kind of said to you, it's never a company with nothing to talk about. There's between the gimmicks and the music, there's plenty to dig into there, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, as someone who read a lot of Russell crap back in the day, I mean, that website is just paved with so many bad WCW gimmicks. And yeah, they are a very obvious and direct point of mockery and ridicule and blame for why WCW went down. But it wasn't just the gimmicks, you know, it was the booking, it was the management, it was wrestler egos, it was the whole big package of what WCW became, as you can attest to, Dave, I'm sure, as to why the company went down. And it's a shame, too, because until AEW came around, there really wasn't that proper number two company in American wrestling. I mean, yeah, there was TNA, of course, but even at its biggest, TNA never reached the heights of what AEW has accomplished or what WCW did in its heyday, Dave, you know?
And I think you hit on it there, that it's like, it's not necessarily any of the gimmicks or any individual storyline or any individual bit of music even that we're going to talk about. I think it was accumulation of factors over many, many years.
Right.
That kind of, it makes it tough on the rewatch, the way we do it, because you're seeing individual left turns where they should have gone right. And I was like, if you had just done a minor course correction on this guy or on this angle or something like that. And I think we oversimplify things when we look back in the past. And like the popular thing now, I think particularly among younger fans or people who haven't gone back in a deep dive, is like, oh, when Russo came in, that was the end of it then. But what we're finding quite interesting is that I think it was probably already in the irreversible slide quite some time before Russo showed up. Not that he helped, not that he should escape blame, but it was a lot of things over a long period of time.
Yeah, if you think Vince Russo calling Hulk Hogan a big bald son of a bitch was the death of WCW, it just wasn't, I'm afraid. It was, you know, death by a thousand cuts, as the saying goes. But hey, listen, we are here to celebrate, not to mourn. It's supposed to be fun. And you know what, Dave? These gimmicks may not be the classiest around, but we'll have some fun regardless, I think.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, so let's get to these songs here. And we have five, as per usual, like I said. And we'll go in chronological order as well, starting off with this fellow in 91, Brad Armstrong, the late Brad Armstrong, who had many a gimmick in WCW over the years. He was the Candyman, he was Bad Street, he was BA, Buzzkill. But in this case, we're talking about when he donned that iconic yellow and purple outfit to become the superhero Arachnaman, with his famous superpower of inciting legal action for Marvel Comics. Look at him go! And the Arachnaman theme is by Eric Caspar from the Cassinus Music Library. This is Rockman. We'll be right back. So any potential legal issues aside here, I kind of dig this theme. You know, it's your standard rock and instrumental, but it does have that very upbeat, heroic tone to it, and it's really fast-paced and high energy as well. And as you've said before on the show here, if you're going for a superhero wrestler, that's what the song has to be, really, I think. Now, obviously, there are no lyrics here, but if there were, I think that might have made things a bit trickier with the legal department. You know, Arachna Man, does whatever an Arachna can. You know, that would have made things a little bit dicier, legally speaking. But otherwise, it's a good little song, Dave, I think.
Yeah, I don't think it's... It was a good start, because the theme bangs. Like, it's got a really crunchy riff. There's some, like, there's hints of Van Halen about the guitar soloing that's going on during it. I really, really like it. I had kind of expected, when I went to sit down and listen to this, like, is this going to be just absolute carbon copy of the animated Spider-Man theme song? Like, how close are they going to get to this thing? But it went a different way. The actual intellectual property it was most evocative for me of is this would be the soundtrack to a great court in Windjammers. If you ever played the original flying disc game back, I think it was like, was it Neo Geo back in the day? That's like the kind of just it, that kind of a celebratory, like you said, heroic, almost beachy vibe. I was really digging it. It was maybe the best thing about this gimmick.
Yeah, and it's funny, the song is called Rockman. You know, if they wanted to do a ripoff of The Thing from Fantastic Four, Rockman would be the perfect name. You know, Rockman, Professor Z, Blue Cougar, Summer Marine, all the stars are here.
Yeah, and I just like trying to get in the space of Brad Armstrong at the time, looking up pictures of the Arachna Man suit. Like, it was just asking to be sued. Like, it's somewhere halfway between like the OG Spider-Man costume and like a Baron Zemo kind of thing. And this is like, if you're thinking about it, it's like 91 92, isn't it?
Yeah, mid to late 91. Yeah.
So this is like this is a Marvel that is way different from now, where like Marvel now is probably too big to worry about petty lawsuits. But this was a Marvel that was like 4 years away from declaring bankruptcy. So they were looking for settlements, and like this was not something that was going to escape them, I imagine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a few matches of his cut out on YouTube, and you watch him come out for the entrance, and it's like, you know, he's billed from Web City. And he does the thing that Serpentico does nowadays, where he shoots his hands out and the quote-unquote webs fly out. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, it's very charming in a way, but it's also very cheap-looking. Yeah. And the costume itself is not good. It looks to me like a mix between Corn on the Cob and King Mabel. That's the visual I get there. So, yeah, I could see why Marvel would poke their noses around at this guy, yeah.
It doesn't really fit great on him either. And it's something I've noticed over the years in WCW as well, is that like when you go below a certain level on the card, the significantly less effort is put into the gear, and everybody's wearing something that's either like too tight or too big. And it's weird because in WWF, a lot of people would wear stuff that was too small for them, and they were absolutely bursting out of it, which if I was a wrestler, I'd think that was the way I'd want to go. Whereas a lot of acts in WCW over the time we've been watching it have been going for stuff that's just like outright baggy on them, which is very, very strange.
I will say, though, Arachna Man, very much a pioneer when it comes to wrestlers dressing up as superheroes, because nowadays, you know, there are so many wrestlers who come out with superhero themed gear and outfits, like, you know, Brian Cage with the Wolverine stuff and all the countless Gargano superhero gears. Like, it's endless nowadays. So, you know, laugh all you want at Arachna Man, but the guy's a pioneer, Dave.
I definitely got less secondhand embarrassment watching archival footage of Arachna Man than I did when, like, Ricochet was doing his Nightwing gimmick.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah, that was a very memorable chapter in all our lives.
With the full body suit, yeah.
But there's like there is a huge crossover between the comic book fan and the wrestling fan. And I totally get why you would want to kind of tap into that. And I think someone who did it very well for a long time was Rey Mysterio, because he would do it as the kind of, like, the big WrestleMania gear would be Joker or whatever.
Daredevil, and then he just go, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he'd do it for the big show and then he'd go back to normal, like his normal gear. It wouldn't be the gimmick he was then saddled with for a while. And I think that's, again, the balance you want to strike with wrestling fans who maybe aren't into comics and like, this is dumb after like two or three matches, or the comic book fans who, again, after two or three matches of doing that, just feel they're being pandered to. So I feel for BA. We've talked about him a bunch on Days of Thunder, and he's a guy who I think was like just slightly not good enough in the ring. And then what really hurt him was him just having these gimmicks thrown at him. And just I couldn't criticize him for being in the position where he just didn't say no to any of them, or at least it didn't see. If those are the ones he said yes to, I'd hate to see the gimmicks he said no to.
Listen, a gig's a gig, you know. I mean, it's a living, as the Flintstones would say. So yeah.
Hey, look, he got a surprising amount of TV time through the end of the 1990s. So like, you know, who am I to criticize his choices?
So we'll skip ahead now a few years to 1993, and this wrestler, Dave, he's going to shock the world because he is the Shock Master. Yes, good old Uncle Fred, good old Tugboat, good old Typhoon. And the Shock Master theme is from the Coca Media Library. It's by Christian LaRue and Daniel Darris. This is Guitar Error 1 / Guitar Error 2 / Guitar Error 3. So this has to be one of the strangest songs we've done on the show yet, I think. But still, it's oddly appropriate. Because after the infamous Shockmaster debut, where he, fell in his fucking arse, as the Bulldog said, they leaned into it and made him a klutz. Like, he would run out and trip over the guardrail and whatnot and fall over. So they made him a stumbling boob. And really, what better music to go along with that than, you know, a series of purposely bad guitar playing. It's kind of perfect, Dave.
Yeah, the way they did the gimmick after this is very reminiscent of, and this even for me is maybe a niche reference. There was a British sitcom in the 70s, I think, called Some Mothers Do Have 'Em, that my granddad used to watch. And as this actor, Michael Crawford, played a character, Frank Spencer, who his whole thing was, he was like, what way can he put his foot in a bucket, fall off a ladder, go crashing through a window, all sorts. That is kind of where they tried to go with this. I do, much like with BA, in some ways I do feel bad for old Uncle Fred, but at the same time, after that legendary debut, this was maybe the only pivot that prolonged his TV time. But the theme itself is bizarre. It's I would have named it the inelegant name of Guitar Errors 1 through 3. I would have called it the Cease and Desist Medley. Because I was able to pick up strains of the Beatles and the Rolling Stones in this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you listen closely to the song and you know your classic rock, each segment is trying to play an iconic guitar riff and screwing up each time. So the first one, I'm not 100% sure, but I believe it's Johnny Be Good by Chuck Berry.
That's what it is, yeah.
I think that's it. The second one, Day Tripper by the Beatles. And the third one is Satisfaction by the Rolling Stones. So technically speaking, the Shockmaster had Chuck Berry, the Beatles, and the Stones for entrance music, technically speaking. So, you know, good for him, I guess.
I'd like to tot up how much using the actual three songs would have cost them relative to Coca have clearly done the maths here. It's like, how much of these songs can we play before we start getting charged? Because particularly I think Day Tripper is not changed really at all. from the, like, it is immediately recognizable as Day Tripper by the Beatles. At least Satisfaction is a little bit, they've done something there, and same with Chuck Berry. But Day Tripper is just like, oh my god, like, this is just literally the song.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, given how much it costs to license the Beatles for stuff, it's not cheap, let me tell you. I mean, I remember when Mad Men used Tomorrow Never Knows in an episode once, and that was a big deal because, you know, it's the Beatles, and you don't hear them that often in movies and TV shows, and apparently it took years to get it approved, too. So, yeah, whatever these guys did, changed it enough, made it short enough, too. It's a pretty short track as well. Apparently it worked there, Dave.
Yeah. I think, like, at this time as well, it was only a few years after Michael Jackson had bought the Beatles library as well.
That's right, yeah.
So, using Beatles music was contentious, you could say, at best.
Yeah, yeah. By the way, I looked up some footage of Shockmaster using this song. He comes out to it on Worldwide, and Shivani goes, "Is that you playing the guitar, Jess?" And Jesse Ventura goes, "That's the sorriest intro music I've ever heard." And Shivani goes, "Yeah, I wonder who picked that out." And it's like, oh, poor Shockmaster, leave the man alone. He suffered enough, for God's sake. Come on.
Yeah. God, I hope he never watched back any of those shows, although I can't imagine why he would have.
Yeah. So we go now from the former Typhoon to the former Earthquake, John Tenta, who during his time in WCW started out as Avalanche. No legal troubles there, I'm sure. And then he was transformed by Kevin Sullivan into The Shark. And the Shark theme is by Jimmy Hart and Howard Helm. This is The Shark theme. Thing about John Tenta, he's got lifeless eyes, black eyes, like a doll's eyes. Farewell and adieu to you, fair Spanish lady. I'll stop. So, it's written in the bylaws of pro wrestling that if you have a shark-themed wrestler of some sort, they need to have a song based on the music from Jaws. It is what it is, really, and yeah. That's what we have here. Of course, like with the last song, Jimmy Hart made sure to change the notes just enough to not get sued. But still, look, it's the Jaws theme, okay? It's one of the most iconic, ubiquitous pieces of music of all time. And again, when you have a shark wrestler, what's he going to get? Shark music. That's just the way it goes there, Dave.
Yeah, you kind of have to. It's the only one that's in your head when you sit down at the desk to mix a shark-themed wrestling song. And you know what? I'm kind of fine with it to an extent because I can't imagine the kind of the other option around this, like around the 90s, would be for people to do like an Under the Sea ripoff. And, you know, I'm actually okay with the Jaws theme. And I thought this one was like a prime cut of Jimmy Hart in as much as it's a song that is clearly screaming at you. This is the John Williams Jaws theme. But it is also like slightly its own thing as well. Like it does ride that line of legal trouble very well. And I as far as songs on this list go, I thought it's quite decent. Like I enjoyed it. The one thing I think where they were feeling their oats a little bit too much is after maybe 10 or 20 seconds of this, there's like a single discordant piano key that gets brought in at the end of every bar. And like, it, to me, it's discordant in a way that's unpleasant, not in a like, ooh, this is chilling. John Tenta is going to come out and I assume eat me. It's in a way that's like, that just doesn't sound, that sounds grating on my ear. I could have done without that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is that extra spooky element to this one. Like, it's not just the dun 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 dun. There's also the creepy atmosphere to it as well, with the keyboard swaths in the background there, and the like. It's very mystical, and it reminds me a lot of the music in the Dungeon of Doom theme, which, given the shark was in that stable, it lines up there. So yeah, we don't just have a shark wrestler theme; we have a Dungeon of Doom specific shark wrestler theme. So they went the extra mile there, at least, Dave, that's for sure.
Yeah, and I respect that. A little bit of effort goes a long, long way with these things.
Mm. And speaking of shark wrestlers, by the way, Shark Boy, the cult favorite, yes. He was in late stage WCW, mm-hmm. actually, and they reused this song for him because why not, right? And in fact, if you go on Spotify and you look up the album the song is on, WWE, the music of WCW, the song is actually labeled Shark Boy. But it was the Shark Man who used it first, goddammit, all right? Some respect to Tenta, please, for God's sake.
Yeah, damn right. I think like one of the great joys of WCW is, one, the recycle theme thing, which this is not an isolated incident of.
Oh, no.
But also the kind of, if you weren't someone who was around at the time and remembers, it will shock you, the people that start showing up in that company by the end. Like, even, I suppose, during Thunder, like, we had a two Thunder run in 1998 of seeing Nick Dinsmore wrestle on the program. And it just, there are so many of those cases, and it just kind of, the volume of that increases when you get towards 2000 and 2001, where to say they have given up it would be an understatement.
Yeah, you know, you look over there to your left and it's like there's Shima and Don Fuji, and on the right there's Christopher Daniels, there's AJ Styles, who was in there at the end as part of Air Raid. Miko Satomura had a match or two. Dragon Kid had a match or two. It's like the amount of people that wrestled in WCW at one point or another is staggering. Because, you know, it's not just Nitro and Thunder. You've got Pro, you've got Worldwide, you've got Saturday Night, you've got all these C shows that need wrestlers to fill out the programming. So yeah, the alumni page of WCW is quite long there, Dave, for sure.
Yeah, and like even then, not only because they have all those shows, but they have obviously dark matches on those shows. There's like an additional layer of guys that's like, oh my god, like Super Dragon wrestled a tag match on a on a, you know, a dark match on Thunder. What are you talking about? It's just a fascinating promotion.
Well, as far as the shark goes, one more thing here. It always makes me feel bad hearing the story about how Tenta, he had a tattoo on his arm of a tiger, because he went to Louisiana State University and their mascot's a tiger. And when they gave him the shark gimmick, he went to a tattoo parlor on his own volition and covered over the tattoo with a shark. And the gimmick ended up lasting only about a year. And he cuts that infamous, you know, I'm not a fish, I'm a man promo. So, you know, that's the chaotic nature of wrestling. Some gimmicks last a whole long time, some just don't. But tattoos, those are pretty permanent. So, you know, I always feel bad for him in a way when I hear that story there, Dave.
Was that promo perhaps the impetus for Derek Zoolander's Merman? Who's to say? John Tenta, very influential. But that is, yeah, that's commitment to a bit that I couldn't personally do myself. I respect the hell out of it. Not him trying to lobby WCW to make him into the original Tiger King, but to just go along with it and cover over the tattoo. My hat's off to, you can't say the man didn't try everything to make it work.
Listen, he went back to the WWF after this and he put on the Golga mask. He had the Cartman doll and he danced his ass off with the oddities because he loves this business so much there, Dave. God bless him.
Big respect.
Theme number four, and speaking of the oddities, by the way, we're going to step into your neck of the woods here, Dave. 1999 WCW.
Hell yeah.
When a tag team from Detroit, Michigan arrived on the scene and took the promotion by storm. No, not the Steiners. I'm talking about Shaggy 2 Dope and Violent J, the Insane Clown Posse. And what a shock. The ICP have a theme song by the ICP. How convenient. This is off of the album WCW Mayhem the Music. It's also on Forgotten Freshness 3. This is Take It. So I can't call myself a learned scholar when it comes to the ICP. My knowledge of them is quite casual. I know about Juggalos. I know about Faygo Soda. Magnets, how do they work? You know, all the basics, really. So I can't call myself a fan, per se. But, gosh dang it, Dave, I can't lie to you. I actually kind of like this song. You know, it's similar to, say, Limp Bizkit, where I may not be a fan of their oeuvre, but there are certain songs that come across, and it's like, this is pretty catchy. So, yeah, I kind of dig it. So, yeah, the heart wants what the heart wants. And apparently in this case, Dave, the heart wants Wicked Clowns.
Yeah, and I think context is key, isn't it? Like, there's a lot of these bands that, in a wrestling context, the music really works. And I was the same, where I probably haven't heard this song since the time. Because I would have been, where we are in the podcast now is around the time I started watching Thunder. And Insane Clown Posse showed up about a month ago on the show. And the Deadpool is currently happening before Raven's spectacular departure in the next month or so from WCW. But I was thinking in listening to this, is there a musical act out there that's more synonymous with wrestling where none of their music really is? Like, even though they use this as their theme, I would never... Their music doesn't come up my head when I think of wrestling music in the way that, like, bands like you said, Limp Bizkit or Saliva or anything like that. Bands that they never got in the ring, they didn't wrestle, but their music is the soundtrack of my wrestling fandom. Whereas these guys actually... not only wrestle, but stick around for most of the rest of WCW on and off. And I, when I think of Insane Clown Posse, one of the first things after Faygo, obviously, I think of is them in wrestling, because they are just all over the map. They are really living the dream. I think Bobby Heenan or Tony Schiavone, one of them says on, like, during their first match that, like, when they got their first royalty check, when they signed their record deal, they bought a wrestling ring. So these guys are just like living their dream in 1999, and it is a shrewd bit of business to license their music for WCW. They're a band that are kind of like almost on a Kiss level of being able to merchandise themselves. The revenues aren't at the same level as Kiss, but they know they have a brand and it sells.
Absolutely, yeah. And as far as them in wrestling goes, they had their own promotion, for God's sake. Like, for many years, Juggalo Champion Shit Wrestling, as it was called, that was a thing. And yeah, they were in WCW, they were in WWF, they were in ECW, TNA, ROH. Right now, actually, Violent J is in the NWA, right now, as you speak. So yeah, they've been to a lot of places, a lot of big places, and good for them, because they love pro wrestling. This is not like a cash grab. They legitimately want to do this, Dave.
Yeah. No, they genuinely do, and they're an act that when you see them, they are trying and they are enjoying it. Like, we're just at the tail end of 1999 WCW, which for music fans, you may remember as the summer where they were trying to shoehorn in any musical act they could. This is the
No
summer
Limit Soldiers.
Of,
yeah.
Megadeth just did their Nitro concert. And as I said, they have Goldberg's new theme as a Megadeth song. We're starting to do the James Brown gimmick with the Cat.
Mm-hmm. Kiss, of course.
Yes, all that. And this is maybe the kind of like the most positive legacy that whole summer has, because through the dying days of WCW, through their last appearance, like, Insane Clown Posse are over. The crowd do enjoy them. They do get into them. One thing I think we should say from a disclaimer point of view, Andrew, is that in spite of listing all the illustrious companies that they worked for through the 90s and 2000s, we should tell everybody they are terrible. As wrestlers, they are awful. They start off awful. And to my memory, I haven't watched the latter days of ICP showing up in wrestling promotions, but I'm pretty sure they remain terrible.
Listen, we're trying to be positive here, okay? Because it's supposed to be a happy episode, but you're right. Yeah, their enthusiasm level outweighed their skill sets in the ring, shall we say. Kind of like Mongo. You know, yeah. Mongo wanted to wrestle. His actual wrestling skills, not quite up to the task, really.
I think you allow, I don't know if a pass is the right word, but kind of when you can tell they're into it and they're actually trying to, you know, roll up their sleeves and help out the company and get involved and stuff, and they really like it and they're not just collecting a paycheck like so many of the actual trained professional wrestlers in the company would be at different stages, you kind of go, you know what, fair enough. It might be like a slow motion train wreck sometimes, but I cannot fault them for effort. And I can't fault them for having like the look and the brand and stuff like that down. And it certainly helped out Vampiro in the company.
Mm. Well, as far as the song goes, I do love how most of it is not necessarily subtle, because nothing about the ICP is ever subtle. But it's more straightforward in a way, more plain, I think. If it was up to me, I would never dare you. If it was up to me, I would rather spare you. If it was up to me, I would try to sway him. Everything is up to him. Everything is up to him. Everything is up to him. It's all up. You have to take it. So it gets more hyped up in the chorus musically, but overall, it's not over the top lyrically speaking. And then we get the rap verse. You don't want to see what goes on over here. You don't even want to get near. Shit. If I was you, I'd turn around and back on up. Before your ass gets stuffed, little buster. Trying to mean mug with that lip flapping. What you thought was going to happen. Turn around, bitch boy, and break off fast. Before you get that foot in your ass, motherfucker. Now that's the ICP we know and love there, Dave. Come on.
Yeah. You have to wait a while. They're true workers, because they build you up to the high spots. You have to go through it for a while. You hear them talk about Vampiro in the song beforehand. You're like, okay. And then, yeah, you hit this verse from, I'm assuming it must be Shaggy of the two of them.
Yeah.
That spits here. And yeah, this is exactly what, when you, and this might be the longest I've listened to Insane Clown Posse without interruption in my life, but this is, if you were to ask me beforehand, is like, what would an Insane Clown Posse song sound like? This is exactly what I'm here for.
Mm-hmm. And the song got a lot of use too, because this was their theme. It was Vampiro's theme, the Deadpool, the Dark Carnival, and according to the liner notes of the album Forgotten Freshness 3, the song was originally about Satan and watching your friend go to hell and not being able to help him. Everything is up to him. You just have to take it. Him being the devil. And then they give it to Vampiro as a theme song. So they added Vampiro's name to the song to make it fit better. So there you go.
Hmm. Yeah, there's like a weird through line in their music I've often heard about religion. And about, you know, they kind of... It, the back half of their discography is much more transparent about that. Like, this is them being subtle about the devil, as you say, compared to what they would be later. But much like yourself, I'm not Juggalo certified, so I can't speak with great affection or knowledge about them. The main kind of other time outside of wrestling their music has come across my field of view is they did a one-off single for Jack White's Third Man Records a few years ago, where it was them rapping over remixed Mozart. And it's deeply unpleasant. Do you think it's going to be two great taste great together? It's not that.
I can only imagine the orange juice and toothpaste combination that is ICP and Mozart. So
it's deeply troubling.
Yeah. But anyway, last theme here, and we're about to step into your future, Dave.
Oh.
That's right. 2000 WCW. It's coming, my friend. It's coming. And there are plenty of wackety schmackety gimmicks in 2000 WCW. But we're going to look at this big fella here. That 70s guy, Mike Awesome, with his feathered hair and groovy outfits, man. Mike's theme is by Arch Bacon. Great name. It's from the Match Music Library. This is Sexy Lady. Listen, I may not be an expert when it comes to the ICP, but when it comes to the super sounds of the 70s, I know a thing or two. And as soon as this song started and I heard the pew, 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 I clocked it right away. This is Can't Get Enough of Your Love, Babe by Barry White. Except instead of Barry White, they've got a sultry saxophone. And listen, I love a good sax as much as the next guy, but it's hard to replace Barry White, Dave, you know?
It is, yeah, we have Barry White at home. That's what this team very much is. I do think it does a great job of conjuring an image of Mike Awesome in a smoky lounge with like a tiny microphone, trying to, you know, endear himself to some of the local patrons by singing his Barry White cover. I have mixed feelings about it because I think it's a theme that works very well for a gimmick that I really wish never existed.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the whole thing is just so bizarre because it's Mike Awesome. You know, it's the gladiator, 6'6", angry and mean. And, you know, he's had Welcome to the Jungle as a theme song before. He's had Bruce Dickinson, the Awesome Bomb theme in ECW. In WCW before this, he had the Beautiful People ripoff. And now he's Mr. Shagadelic Groovy 70s dude. And I can't tell if it's better or worse than the fat chick thriller gimmick he had before this, but it's certainly memorable at least.
Going back and kind of digging into his tenure a little bit for this show, the thing that was stark to me was the timeline of, like, he debuts and he's already at that 70s guy within 6 months. And that's via the fat chick thriller. He was the fat chick thriller before this. So within 6 months, they'd already decided that, you know, giant Mike Awesome killing people wasn't the thing they wanted to roll with. There was a very famous early, they tried to rehab him at one stage and have him wrestle Lance Storm for the US title, but it was at a pay-per-view that was in Canada where the normally heel Lance Storm was treated like a god. And poor Mike Awesome not only ate the loss, but, you know, was booed soundly by the Canadian crowd. Oh. And then, yeah, he has his fat chick thriller bit, and then he goes into this. And look, he was never a man who was comfortable with a microphone in his hand. And him having to do his kind of lounge lizard, his flirting and his dad jokes when he was in, I can't wait to watch every segment of it, but he they gave him a talk show
the
segment.
Lava Lamp Lounge, baby. Yeah.
Yeah. They had him come in for a pay-per-view on the Partridge Family bus. they had Gary Coleman be his second, even though Gary Coleman is distinctly an 80s celebrity. It's a good song, but it's a gimmick that makes me very sad.
You mentioned the bus. That also bugs me about the gimmick, because the theme song is like this R&B pseudo-disco-y kind of song, but they gave him a bus based on, the Partridge Family. And the Partridge Family, if you didn't see it, was a show in the 70s about a family band, but their music wasn't disco or R&B. It was like soft rock and pop music. So... yeah. If they found a way to make the bus more R&B flavored, I guess it would make more sense. But as a Partridge Family bus, the two things just don't work together, despite both being from the 70s. I sure hope someone was fired for that blunder.
We were at like a high point of 60s, 70s nostalgia at the end of the 90s, because, you mentioned Austin Powers. There was that 70s show, different bits like that, that were cashing in on the 60s, 70s nostalgia, and trust wrestling to handle it as weirdly and inconsistently as possible. with this, I can't even remember in hindsight how long the 70s guy gimmick lasts for. An eternity in my head, but it could have been all of just a couple of months.
I think it was a couple of months, and then they switched him over to being Team Canada, Mike Awesome, for the rest of WCW.
There's like, you want to talk about like on a Halloween theme, a guy who was legitimately scary as a wrestler. like this dude might actually like mess you up big time in a match. He's coming off the back of like the incredible Masato Tanaka matches in Japan and in ECW.
He was in FMW, for God's sake. He was in street fights and barbed wire matches galore.
And he comes into WCW with a huge amount of heat, because he, like, in the eyes of many fans, betrayed ECW. For signing for WCW after his checks bounced, and I'm not interested in re-legislating all that now, but there's momentum you can do. Like, he debuts by attacking and destroying Kevin Nash, and you want to argue the merits of a guy who you need to push him as a big man wrestler, and you have him debut attacking maybe one of the only guys in the company that's considerably larger than him. But there's so much you could have done that to end up within 6 months in the Lava Lamp Lounge is astonishing. Even like, he just speed ran the WCW model.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, well, if I can bring up the bus one more time, I've brought this story up before. One of the first wrestling music videos I ever watched was this collection of botches, and one of them was the time when Mike Awesome gave, here he is again, Shaggy 2 Dope, an awesome bomb on the roof of the bus. And then Shaggy started to slide off the roof, and you can see Awesome scrambling to grab him, but he's too late, and Shaggy just slides off and falls straight down into concrete. It's pretty bad, but it's burned my brain there, Dave.
Yeah. He also, you've reminded me there of, there was, I can't remember at which point in all this mess that he also, they tried him with the career killer gimmick.
That was before Fat Chick Thriller, I believe.
Before. Yeah, so they had him try to make like, when Mike Awesome competes, he could end your career. So he was doing the thing where like his gimmick match was ambulance matches. And I was reading around about it, and I think he did 5 ambulance matches on TV and he lost 3 of them.
Yeah, it just wasn't a good time for old Mike Awesome. And I know it's harping on it a bit too much maybe, but it's Mike Awesome. Like, it's crazy that he was just given this 70s guy gimmick and the Fat Chick Thriller gimmick and all that. It's crazy, but WCW, man, that's just the way they went.
Yeah. It's like, I mean, like, you, there was, we were getting this gimmick at some point. Once it enters somebody's head, somebody was getting it. So we might have at some stage in a, like, sliding doors reality ended up with, like, that 70s guy, Brad Armstrong, or, you know, Lord knows who else. But unfortunately, it was Mike that drew the short straw.
The fat chick thriller, Kaz Hayashi. Just, you never know with these multiverses, Dave. They get pretty wild there, so.
Yeah. Oh, I'd be down for it. I'd actually like to have seen Shane Douglas get saddled with the 70s guy gimmick just to see his face.
Do-do-do-do-do. Cut the fucking music! But anyway, that's going to do it for this episode of Music of the Mad. Thank you so much for listening. And Dave, thank you so much for being here. I said earlier this was going to be fun, and this was indeed a lot of fun. So thank you, man.
Yeah, thank you so much, Andrew. I really, really enjoyed it. It's made me feel a little bit more optimistic about what I have ahead of me, that it'll be some fun to have talking about things like that 70s guy. So thank you so much for having me, and happy Halloween, everyone.
Yeah, just keep your head down. You'll get through it okay, I think. but any plugs you want to give, go right ahead.
Yeah, so as you mentioned at the top, I'm the host of the Days of Thunder podcast on the Voices of Wrestling podcast network that you can find here. On Twitter, we're at WCW Thunder Pod. I'm at the to Dave. We basically, every 2 weeks, we are going through the entire timeline of WCW by just looking at Thunder. We don't really dip that often over onto Nitro. We do the pay-per-views as well. We are, as I said, in the summer of 1999, fresh off one of the most abysmal shows I've ever seen in my life, Road Wild 1999, that forced me to think long and hard about my life choices that led me to do this as a podcast. But yeah, we have a lot of fun on there. You know, it's honestly enjoyable, not only kind of, you know, clowning on the bad stuff, but also trying to find the gems that maybe we forgot about in all that mess. And, you know, if you like the sound of myself and Lee, try it out on the Voice of Wrestling Podcast Network. And then we also have a Patreon that you can find at alargemanappears.com. €5 a month gets you at least 3 bonus podcasts from us, where we cover all sorts of stuff like movies, good wrestling shows, and much, much more besides.
Absolutely, yes. Anytime I see a really big wrestler show up on a show, I just think a large man appears, because it's force of habit at this point, and I have you and Lee to thank for that, Dave.
Anytime. If that's my legacy, I'm happy with it.
Yes, yes. Well, Music of the Mat is also part of the Voices of Wrestling podcast network. You can find all the great shows on there at voicesofwrestling.com. Follow the show on Twitter at Music of the Mat. Follow me on Twitter at Andrew T. Rich. Also, follow the show on Blue Sky at Music of the Mat, and follow me on Blue Sky there at Just Andrew on Blue Sky. VoicesOfWrestling.com/Discord for all discussions and comments. VoicesOfWrestling.com/donate for any donations. I'll just click the big donate button beneath the name Music of the Mat. If you donate, hey, thanks so much. You're awesome. And of course, rate, review, subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, the Voices of Wrestling YouTube page, and many other places. Dave, thank you again, and I'll see you around.
Thank you.
All right, for Dave Ryan, I'm Andrew Rich. Happy Halloween, and I'll see you next time on Music of the Mat. Take care, guys.
Music of the Mat is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The songs used throughout this show are property of their respective copyright holders.
Hello, everyone. My name is Taylor.
And I'm Kelly.
And we are the co-hosts of Jumping Bomb Audio, the number one show all about the world of Joshi Pro Wrestling. Episodes drop every other Monday, where we discuss the biggest Joshi news, review shows, and preview the hottest upcoming Joshi action.
So whether you're a new fan or an old fan, we've got something here for you at Jumping Bomb Audio.
Check us out on the Voices of Wrestling podcast network.